At this time all week on the show, we're talking about young people growing up in care in our area. We've already heard about what it feels like to be taken into care and what it's like to live in a foster family. In a moment, we're going to hear more about the serious shortage of foster parents and the impact that that has on young people. We're also talking today about the people who run this system. Social workers working for each of our local authorities. I spent time with a team of social workers in one bit of Berkshire last week, and inevitably you go into an office environment and you think, yeah, this looks okay, and you've got a vague notion of what social work is all about, and then they explain the rules and regulations to you, and I'm sitting there taking notes as a journalist thinking, yeah, okay, I understand all this now for the discussions I'm going to do on the radio next week. And then the phone rings, and the people who are, telling me about social work are suddenly dealing with a teenage girl in our area who's just been raped by her dad, and she's bleeding and doesn't know what to do, and clearly they need to act quickly and get her out of that situation. Now, we all know that kind of stuff goes on, but there's something about it happening here, just a matter of hours before I was hearing about it, that really brought it home to me. The sort of horrific family situations that these people are dealing with all the time and trying to make the very best decisions all the time for the young people who are caught up in this kind of stuff. And I went away from my time in the office and my time out with social workers and meeting foster parents, feeling really emotional about my own family, emotional about the sort of things that people can do to each other. It must make you cynical, I think, to work in social work, because you're constantly coming up against the worst possible things that people can do to children. Seems to me, and I'm judging by my conversations with foster parents, it seems to me that social services departments are staffed by people who really desperately want to do the right thing by young people. And sometimes the system gets in the way of that because there are just too many young people who need help. Each social worker's got too many cases. You know, they might be dealing with one family in theory with 3-4 children in, but those 3-4 children might all have different fathers. So, you know, it might be the most complicated family arrangement in the world they're trying to unpick. And they've got, 10, 11 of those to try and keep tabs on all the time. And there's a big turnover of social workers. There's a big turnover of people who just leave the profession. And one thing that I know people who have a social worker or foster parents find frustrating is that the children in their care will have their social worker changed and changed and changed and changed. If you have worked in this area, if you've been a social worker, I'd love to talk to you about it. If you've had a social worker, 0845 900 1041 is the telephone number. It's one of the aspects of this that we're looking at on the show this morning. First, though, we're going to hear a success story. This is a pretty desperate story, but it does have a happy ending. It's Oyetande's story. Up to the age of 15, what happened in Oyetande's life is a bit traumatic for him to talk about. He's known as Ollie, and this is a guy who's never met his real parents. He grew up in Africa in extreme poverty, came to England with his uncle. Can't really talk about how he got here, except to say that after he got here, he had to flee for his life and ended up at Reading Station. It was there that he was found and taken in by social services, and his life was transformed by the love and care he got from the woman he now calls his Angel Nan. Some people never
say the words I love you. I think the basic things a human need is food, shelter, clothing, and loving, like generally someone caring for you. Some people never say the words I love you. Back then, I'd live under a roof, which counted as shelter, but the rest, the basic thing, it wasn't there. And for an human to be lacking this basic thing, it doesn't make you feel human. You're basically no one. They've got a wall in China. I came to this country with my uncle, basically, and with the promise of being educated and I'm gonna go to school and everything else. And but when I got here, it was a different story entirely, where I had to flee and find my way. And because when I came in, I was so small, like you can practically count my bone in my body. Like, now I got meat. I haven't got meat in my body back then. You can actually see the bones. I've got a wall around me that you can't even see. Coming here and being in care just showed me another new side of adult, that people can actually be nice, genuinely be nice to people, and people could actually be loving for, like, unconditionally. Something goes right, or well, it's likely to lose me. In my whole life, I've only seen adult people as cruel people and just mean people because of what I've been through. In my head, I was thinking, no, what's she doing? They'll go sell me or something, you know what I mean? What's going on here? Some people never say the words I love you. I find it really strange because, in a way, like, I've never been so cared for in my life, and I've never had that much attention. Some people never say the words I love you. People don't genuinely ask how you're feeling and ask if you've eaten and what would you like to drink? Did you sleep well? You know what I mean? They've got a wall. For me to all of a sudden now have all of these things all at once, just like that. It's just like having a genie and making a wish, and the wish just come true in the next 1 second. I just feel like words are not going to be enough to express how I really feel about all she's done for me. It's just not going to be enough. I feel like it's something I have to show her. And even if I show her, it will still be enough. I have to continuously show her how much I appreciate everything she's done for me.
I guess Ollie's story shows how dramatically a great foster parent, a great social worker, can make a difference in a young person's life. More about this in a second or two. Here's a simple truth: that there just aren't enough foster parents. Now, that often means that children get sent away from the place they know to a home in another part of the country. I'd never thought about this until last week, but a lot of kids from Berkshire who need foster homes end up in Kent. There's a load of foster parents in Kent, apparently. We talked to Kerry Benucci, who's in charge of recruiting foster parents at Windsor and Maidenhead Borough Council. Hi, Kerry.
Hello there.
Good morning. Not easy, because it's a blooming tough job. I mean, having spent some time with foster parents, I've seen what a difficult job it is. How do you persuade people to do it? Why do people do it?
First of all, I tell people that we have a shortage of foster carers in the rural borough of Windsor Maidenhead, raising awareness about this fact, because many people don't actually realise that we're looking for foster carers. So advertising...
All the time, always looking.
All the time, yeah. All the time.
Often you'll find foster parents come from the sort of fostering community, so they're often people whose own parents fostered or were fostered or have some insight fostering already.
Quite often people who have been, who are or have been foster carers, their children have grown up in a family that fosters, and they will then go on to be foster carers themselves, which proves it's obviously a positive experience growing up in a family that fosters.
I mean, it can't be for everyone, can it? Not everyone is going to be right to be a foster parent. So if we accept that truth, what hallmarks in someone are you looking for? What does make someone the right person?
Well, to be the right person, you have to obviously have children's best interests at heart. You have to love children, have a good sense of humour, be able to take the rough with the smooth, and have, you know, want to make a child's future better, a child who's probably had quite a bad start to life. So
I mean, in some ways, we all want those things, don't we? You listen to that and you think, well, you just can't disagree with any of that. But we're not all the right people. So tell me more about the sort of personal characteristics that you need to be able to make it work.
Well, first of all, you have to have time to be able to look after the child. And you have to be a patient, generous, loving person who can understand that a child who's in care has had problems, has come from a difficult background, and, you know, be able to work with that child and other professionals, because being a foster carer is about also working in a team. It's not just yourself. You're working with teachers and healthcare professionals, social workers. So you have to know how to work in a professional team. That's what foster care is.
You've got to be pretty tough, haven't you?
You have, yes.
You've got to be a pretty tough nut, I would say, because you what you're putting yourself in the situation is not only having to handle difficult situations, but you are going to have to go into battle with the system on behalf of the kids that you are responsible for, aren't you?
Yeah, you are in some way backing them up and being their voice and protecting them, but you're not battling with the system, you're working with
that's
the system.
That's what foster parents tell me. That's what foster parents in our area, and I've been through, to be fair, I've not yet met a foster parent from Windsor and Maidenhead, but that's what foster parents in our area tell me. Everyone's on the same side, you know, no one's trying to, you know, achieve bad outcomes, but you have to fight for the kids that are in your care to try and make sure that they're, you know, the right decisions are made on their behalf.
Yeah, you would do that, but you would try to do everything to work as a team for the good of the child, and everybody's working in the same direction. So.
What do you reckon, Nigel? Nigel's a foster parent. You've got to be a battler, haven't you?
You've got to be an advocate for them.
Okay.
Which is slightly different. Sometimes the professional decision may not be the one that you agree with, but they are the professionals.
Mm.
And there has been a recent change in the way that our views are actually going to be sort of heard. This has only been very recent. And as opposed to us going to go back for something like simply as a haircut, we'd have to go and ask the child social worker if that's okay.
Mm.
That now is going to be our responsibility. So the day-to-day sort of things are far more going to be our responsibility.
You might not always agree with the decisions they make, but what I've picked up is that, you know, because social workers tend to have a lot to do, and that's not their fault, that's just how it is, you know, you might need some help. You might pick up the phone and say, I really need some help with this child, and what you might get is, well, we can squeeze you in a week on Thursday.
There is a delay. There's lots of delays in the system. I would agree with that. That's due to, as you say, the lack of resources in certain aspects. How much money do you throw at childcare? How much money do you throw at any of these sort of global and national important things? Is that the resource isn't waiting for you. You've got to go and try and attain that very small pot and get some for your child. You know, and I think sometimes the speed issue is the problem.
Yeah.
You know, the child does get the benefits of going, say, to a counsellor, but the counselling may take 6 weeks to get hold of, and you want it now. And there is problems like that.
It's a bit like any experience you have with your own kids, to be honest. If you need something for your own kids, it's exactly the same. Yeah. You have to battle the system in order to get, you know, stuff that your children need. And when it's your children, or I imagine your foster children, of course you're going to do that. You know, you go and slay dragons for them, wouldn't you?
Exactly. We treat our foster children, I hope every other foster carer does exactly the same, is that they are like our own children. And the fact is, you want the best, and you want them to achieve their best potential, whatever that is, and in whatever they decide to do. And that's how we look at it.
How did you get into this yourself, Nigel?
Well, my wife and I have always thought about doing fostering, even when before we had our own children. And we had our own children 23 years ago we started. And we then said, well, we wouldn't do the fostering while our children were actually in the sort of teenage area. We left it. So we started looking at fostering about 5 years ago, when our own children were at the sort of 13, 14 and sort of 17 years. And then we stepped over the line and sort of made the approach to the local council and said, yes, we'd like to go through the process of being assessed to become foster.
So and you've been through the whole thing with three of your own children, and they still need you.
Yes.
As teenagers.
Indeed.
So what was it that made you think, oh, that's not enough? We need to take on a few more challenges. Three teenagers, not enough. We need to make life even harder for ourselves.
I don't think harder for yourselves.
It's not making it easy for yourself.
I don't know. Some of it is rewarding. It's positive. I look at the fact is that I've always been looking at sort of my personal view is that society needs lots of people to help make a better society. I'm not driven by materialistic things, really. If I had £1 million, I would actually just do foster caring or that type of sort of philanthropic type work, because that's where I think society would be far better. So that's my own personal view.
So you clearly get a lot out of it.
I do.
But there are also...
There are negatives, like everything. Your own child, the life experiences your own children go through, they are exactly the same for a foster child. And sometimes they're actually worse because of the neglect or abuse that they may or may not have suffered prior to coming into your care. And you've got to try and build that self-esteem up. And that's the biggest thing to start with, is to actually say that their child is worth, you are worth something.
And you, Kerry, can see this happening, I suppose. You know, you place a child with Nigel's family or with the other foster family, and you can see that child change, usually pretty quickly. I mean, children, young children anyway, do change really quickly, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard lots of things from foster carers about the children that have come into their care. They might come into care not knowing how to sit at the table or use a knife and fork or be part of a family, and you know, once they're in a family situation that they've never been exposed to, they can actually sit and eat together and, you know, learn to communicate properly. They may never have had people anybody talking to them, so they haven't learned to express themselves. So I think you see immediate rewards in the development of the child once they're in a loving family environment.
I mean, one of the stories I heard last week from a foster carer in our area was that a little girl came to stay with her, and the only vocabulary she had was the only things people had ever said to her, which was, "You're stupid, shut up and go away." They were the words she knew. That was it.
Exactly.
It sounds like that sort of stuff's all too common.
I know, and
it can be. I mean, we've just had an emergency placement put with us. They're three little girls, and you can tell that they had not had a lot of nurturing or even just cleanliness, because it was a battle to get them to simply wash. So you know, you have to start with a routine quite early, quite quickly. Say, this is what we do. This is how everybody expects to live. It's nothing new. So, you know,
no big deal.
You know, bath them, wash their hair, brush their hair. Simple things. And instantly, they weren't going to school and being told they were smelly. It's, oh, you know, you're nice to play be around today. So instantly, they get, oh, people want to be with me. So their self-esteem rises. Hopefully, we can then build on those experiences.
Jackie Daniel was a senior social worker in our area for a long time, now trained social workers. Hi, Jackie.
Hello.
Hi there. Why would anyone want to do this? We've talked about why you'd want to be a foster parent. Why would you want to be a social worker? That's just like inviting stress into your life, isn't it?
It is inviting stress, but I think it's a challenge, isn't it? And it's an opportunity, I think, to try and, you know, to assist people, to support people. So it's not about doing onto people, but actually working alongside them. Because as we know, there are, you know, certain members of the community, at certain times people are in crisis in their families and they need that support. So if you're actually able to work with that family to help them to bring some changes that actually, you know, puts them where they want to be, where they can have a good family life, then, you know, that's the challenge. But yes, there are a lot of pressures equally.
Social worker said to me last week, whatever they've done, there are very, very few people, very few parents who are actually evil. Mm-hmm. It's just all a result of their circumstances. Is that right?
I think, well, there's that whole debate, isn't it, about good or evil, people born evil. There's a nature v nurture debate. But I think people react to environmental factors. You know, you react to your experiences. You know, what was your experience of family life, of parenting? You know, how did you experience that? Because the reality is that most parents, they don't set out to deliberately hurt their children or to create very difficult conditions for them to live in. They've probably not had very good experiences themselves. And if you don't have that to draw on, it is difficult.
How do you decide as a social worker to take a child away from their own family? Because that's a big thing for the child, but it might be a very necessary thing if they're in danger. Just talk me through the process of deciding that.
It is a massive decision, and it's not one that can be taken lightly. And it's important to remember that although the local authority may decide that it's not safe for this child to remain with family, with birth parents, they have to go through the courts in order to actually remove the child. Really, what the local authority would be looking at is risk. You know, how safe is it for this child to remain at home? Now, the risk is not simply about the physical risk in that they're being beaten, they're being hit. It may be around issues of neglect. And you've talked about the three children that you've had recently. So it's about what are the circumstances in the home? Are they being fed? Are they being washed? You know, the home, you will go into homes where there's no bedding, that, you know, that the bath's black because it hasn't been washed. There are bits of food all over the place. You step on the floor, you know, you're lifting your feet up and they are sticking. So it sometimes you can't imagine the conditions. So it's those kind of circumstances, or equally where a child has been abused, whether it's physically or sexually. the local authority decides that actually the risk is too high to remain in the home, that these parents can't keep these children safe, and the only, you know, sometimes they may ask for, to voluntarily accommodate the children, get the parents to agree. But if the risk is very high, the decision may be we actually need a share of parenting.
By the time you find out about it, you know, it's often quite late in the day, isn't it? You know, because someone's going to have to have spotted there's something wrong. Yeah. A teacher, a doctor, someone's going to have to have raised the alarm.
Yeah.
So whatever the problem is, it's probably been going on for ages.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's and the way that social work in the 21st century, there's now been a lot of very recent changes with the social work task force. It's about early prevention. So you're getting it at a much earlier stage. But you're right, by the time we get to some of these children and young people, they're 8, 9, 10, it is very difficult. So what we're very clear about is something called working within the child's time scales. Mm-hmm. So this is that we can't decide, well, parents really, they are saying to us that they want to improve things, but the decision has to be how long can we give those parents? So it's actually about reacting much more quickly now.
Yeah. Does it feel thankless? Because you're rarely going to get thanked by people whose children you're taking away. You're rarely going to get thanked by the children themselves. Mm-hmm. Attention is only drawn to the work you do when you get it wrong.
You're so right. It only makes the front page when it's wrong. As I think we all recognise that going into this, you can't have the expectations that people are going to thank you, because effectively we are actually going into someone and saying your parenting isn't good enough, and that's very hard for people to hear, and so why are they thanking us? But you do occasionally get people who will say thank you very much, you've made a real difference from the work that you've done, and that's what you hold on to. But the other side of that is you have to, as a social worker, you have to think, actually, by what I've done, the department's done, we've kept this child safe, we've given them some life chances that they didn't have previously.
Well, and then this is, you know, that's interesting what you say there. We've made the situation better than it otherwise would have been. Mm. It may not be perfect, it may be a long absolutely. Way from perfect, but it's not as bad as it might have been without our involvement.
Absolutely.
Then it's a success.
Yeah.
Basically, and you'd go along with that, would you? I mean,
if you're keeping a child safe, that can only be a positive thing. You may not be thanked, but when you see the child developing and their situation improving, you know.
Why should it be that you get far more need for social workers, far more cases of child neglect in poorer places? Because we know that's true.
Yeah.
Why is that true?
Because generally, I think people, they're not exposed to perhaps to a lot of the ideas. They don't have the resources that perhaps the larger section of the community has. And their own experiences of growing up are such that, you know, they may think it's perfectly permissible not to, well, let me just say, not to perhaps provide a hot meal several nights a week, that, you know, it's the fast food stuff, you know, all those things. Nothing wrong with that, but it's... You know, it's about what are the things that we would expect for the majority of children in our community. So I think those are the sorts of things that, you know, we'd be looking at.
Let's wrap up with Nigel. You're talking to us now and taking part in the discussion. You're a foster parent.
Yes.
What else is on your agenda today? What's in the diary for today for a foster parent?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, full-time job.
Yes. Work, yeah.
Work. And then it will be back home. This afternoon, the daughters, the little girls are obviously be picked up by my wife from school, and then it'll be back home. They'll be out walking the dogs with us this evening.
Well, that'd be nice, you know. Would it be a nice time,
or
is it not like sort of Enid Blyton land?
It can, depending on the days that the children have had, they will have had some upset at school, may have had something raised about. How long they're going to be with us now, or something like that. So we'll deal with those issues as they come up. But most of it will be a case of providing that secure, loving family, and giving them time to either express what they've had, you know, has happened to them, if they wish to divulge things to us. Or it may be a simple case of, right, we'll listen to them reading their stories, brush their hair, clean their teeth, and
bedtime. Good luck. Thank you very much indeed to all of you for joining me in the studio this morning. It's BBC Radio Berkshire's Handle With Care project, which continues tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, when we're going to hear Sophie's story. I loved spending some time with Sophie last week. It's a Tragic story, Sophie's, though. Sophie was adopted when she was a tiny baby. You'd have thought she was one of the lucky ones. And her adoptive parents were not that nice to her. You can hear Sophie's story as part of Handle With Care tomorrow morning from 9.